This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
I don't know if anyone other than Josh Vernier has ever been on the show in back-to-back days. This is a first. If somebody was going to cross this threshold and do something that has never before been done, I would have picked Jake Eisenberg. Jake, I had no clue that our second date was going to happen this quickly. We had our first date yesterday. It went magical. I was wondering if you were going to call. I didn't know you were going to call so quick.
Well, look, man, when the first date is as magical as it was yesterday, how could you not pick up the phone and call for a second date as soon as possible?
You know what? That's a really, really good point. You know, I'm not sure when our third date is going to be. I mean, I wish we could keep doing this, but man, I'm sad that baseball season has come to a close.
Yeah, and it's weird, too. I was talking to, you know, Danny Ryan, Sue, and Eric after the game last night. And, you know, keep in mind, this is the first time that the Royals have gone to the postseason and not been to the World Series since 1981. And so this is kind of a weird feeling for everybody involved, but, you know, certainly me, given that this was the first postseason that I was a part of. But the thing that I said to them is that it was just so odd that, you know, we had this intense, incredible, electric atmosphere and feeling around Kansas City and around the ballpark and during the game, and then all of a sudden you snap your fingers and it's gone. And you wake up the next morning and you're trying to figure out what to do because you don't really have anywhere to be, and it's really bizarre.
Jake, how are you going to remember this season?
I mean, I'm going to remember this season as a year that, you know, had a pretty incredible turnaround. And I know from the outside looking in, expectations were whatever they were going to be following a 106-loss season. But I think we all came into spring training expecting that this team was going to take a significant step forward and this team was going to, at the very least, compete. And then I think we saw pretty quickly that this team wasn't just going to compete, it was going to contend, and they did. And they made the playoffs. They brought postseason baseball back to Kauffman Stadium after 9 years, and that is no small thing. And I think when we look back at this season, we're going to remember it for a team that turned around kind of the outlook of this organization and this franchise for years to come. And I think we can't help but look back at this season and remember what we witnessed Bobby Witt Jr. do. He put up the single greatest statistical regular season in Royals franchise history. End of sentence, end of story, period. You look at what he did in 161 games this year, and he put up the best single season numbers any Royals player has ever done, and then also took this team back to the postseason. You know, without Bobby Witt Jr., who finished the year as a 10-win player in terms of wins above replacement, you know, technically you put in a league-average shortstop and you're looking at a 76-win team, not an 86-win team. That was the impact that he made on the 2024 Kansas City Royals, and we saw him ascend to superstardom at the end of 2023. Now he is fully entrenched in superstardom and it continues to raise the bar at only 24 years old. I think that's going to be one of the biggest takeaways, is that this was kind of the start of his rise to one of the best five players in the sport year in and year out.
I noticed it afterwards, and I saw a couple media people tweet it out. Whenever the game was over, the person who was at the top of the dugout watching the celebration was Bobby Witt Jr. I am going to be really excited to see an offseason of, hey, I started to figure some things out, but I didn't have the postseason that I wanted, but I love the feeling of this, and I want to get back. I do want to know what that version of Bobby Witt Jr. looks like, that we're not questioning on whether or not he's a superstar. He is a superstar, and he's going to be on the short list of players to kick off the season that can win American League MVP.
Yeah, and I think that'll be the case every single year. And I think what we saw from Bobby this postseason, let's not forget, he had both go-ahead RBIs in the wild card series. He helped the Royals win both of those two games, a 1-0 game in game one, a 2-1 game in game two, and the Royals don't win that game or those games without Bobby Witt Jr. And I think what we saw during the division series was a combination of really the entire Royals offense going cold to a degree. But when that happens, yes, some of it is on the Royals offense, but you also got to look at the other side. Matt Quatrero reminds us this all the time, that the team across the field is trying to win just as much as the team in the first base dugout at Kauffman Stadium. And the Yankees pitching had been really, really good all year, especially their bullpen. Their bullpen didn't allow an earned run the entire division series, and they executed their game plans and executed their pitches exactly the way that they hoped to during the series. It was an incredibly low-scoring series. So, you know, in a sense, both pitching staffs performed well outside the walks that we talked about yesterday. But I think you can tip your cap to the Yankees pitching staff. They executed their game plan against Bobby Witt Jr. and the rest of the Royals lineup. And ultimately, that's a big reason why the Yankees are moving on.
Right now, we're talking to Jake Eisenberg on the Royals Radio Network. I don't think this is something that we're going to talk about 2, 3, 5 years from now, but just being at the game and watching the entire flight of the ball, I'm always going to think, man, what if Kyle Isbell had hit a home run here? Like, you were there, I was there, you could just feel it. That crowd was waiting for anything to get excited about. And if Kyle Isbell had hit a home run in that moment to tie the game up at 3-3, that place would have went absolutely insane.
Man, and I feel like just if everybody that was sitting in the upper deck just took a big inhale and then blew as much as they could toward right field, maybe it would have combated the wind coming in from right just enough to send that ball over the wall, because there was this internal will. And like, we were standing up in the booth as it was happening. As that ball was taking flight, all of us were starting to stand up in our chairs, and we were ready to go crazy also. And unfortunately, that's just kind of the way that the game went last night. And, you know, a tough swing to fall, you know, that close to what would have been a pretty seminal moment in Royals franchise history. But I think it's, you know, I think it's also a testament to how close that game was and how close the series was, that, you know, one swing of the bat at that point in the game could have changed the entire complexion of the game. The fact that all four games were decided by two or fewer runs, I mean, these were coin flip games for the most part. And unfortunately, it landed on Yankees, you know, three times and only the Royals once.
I say this all the time in football is, you know, like, take a team like the Lions, for example. There's two steps that you can take. You can go from being a bad team to being a pretty decent team, but then you got to take that next step from being that good team to, can you be a great team? I'm with you that Royals fans should feel encouraged, because as good as the Yankees are, that's a team that won 94 games, the one seed in the American League playoffs, could probably win the World Series. They are not that far off from being the Yankees. Now it's about doing that work in the offseason to try to close that gap just a little bit to give yourself an even better chance of beating them or Houston or whoever it could be next year in the postseason.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, you know, I'll give you one more number as to how close it really is. You remember when the Yankees came to Kauffman Stadium and took 3 out of 4 from the Royals? That was in mid-June. Since the end of that series, through the end of the regular season, the Royals went 46-46. The Royals were a 500 team from that point of the season to the end of the year. The Yankees were 45-46. They were a game below 500 from that point until the end of the season. So we're talking about two teams that from the time the Yankees left Kauffman Stadium until the end of the regular season were as neck and neck as it gets. And we saw a neck and neck series. And yeah, I think that's incredibly encouraging.
Jake, do you have a stat guy? Because every time I've talked to you, you just got like 4 or 5 of these. I don't believe that you're just sitting down in front of Pro Baseball Reference and busting these numbers down. You got a stat guy that follows you around.
No stat guy. I've just got a lot of experience in minor league baseball, kind of doing every little thing that we can possibly do without any help. And so you know where to find numbers, and you know kind of what numbers might be interesting, and you have a knack for just figuring out the things on your own and just having them at your disposal. Look, if this is only year two for me in Kansas City, I don't have the institutional knowledge of Hall of Famer Denny Matthews, who's been doing it now 56 years. I don't have the experience of Ryan Lefevre, who's three-time All-Big Ten at Minnesota before he jumped into the broadcast booth and has now been doing it in Kansas City for 26 years. So I got to make up that gap somehow. And you know, thankfully, I can whip up a couple of numbers here or there that can help match the eye test. You know, we know kind of what we're seeing. Sometimes the numbers tell us that what we're seeing is actually the thing that we're seeing. Sometimes they tell us to look in a different place, or they tell a different story. And I just think that that's one of the interesting angles that we can take when it comes to this game. It's not all about the numbers at all. It's about feel. It's about reaction. It's about emotion. Sometimes those statistics, sometimes those numbers, they can help illuminate or inform the thing that we're watching in a way that I think is interesting.
Last thing here, Jake, and we appreciate your time. Who was your favorite, I guess least favorite in this context, would be baseball villain? You know, every time Jazz Chisholm came up to bat, he was getting booed. I mean, it didn't matter what he did. And then he kind of did something where he kind of sparked a fake fight, and then there were even more boos about it. Let's say it was 12-year-old Jake Eisenberg. He's fallen in love with baseball. Who was your least favorite player? Who was your baseball villain?
Oh, this is easy. Growing up a Mets fan in the early 2000s, my biggest baseball villain was Chase Utley. You know, those late 2000s Phillies teams, and he was kind of the face of them. And then, of course, there was the takeout slide and the broken leg for Ruben Tejada in the postseason in 2015, I think it was, or whenever that was. The year's escaping me. But point is, yeah, he was the baseball villain of my childhood. But, you know, having been able to take a step back, like, you come to appreciate the kind of player that he was and what he meant both to Philadelphia and then to the Dodgers when he was there at the end of his career. And you understand like why he played the way that he played and how he played. And as much as he was a baseball villain in the eyes of 12-year-old Jake, 29-year-old Jake can now take a step back and say, yeah, that was a player that I didn't really like when I was a kid, that if he came to the plate, I would have absolutely booed. But you know what? If he was on my team, I would have loved that guy.
You know what? Now thinking about this, I think the two for me would be Milton Bradley and also A.J. Pierzynski. Didn't like those guys when I was 12, 13 years old. Hated them, in fact.
You know, I'll give you one more. Like, when I was a kid, like, the worst, you know, sports moment of my childhood was when Carlos Beltran struck out looking in the 2006 NLCS, went down looking at an Adam Wainwright curveball. And so Adam Wainwright immediately becomes a villain in my mind. But man, like, getting a chance to watch him in person and call some of his games over the last few years, and sure, he was in, you know, Cardinal red and all that, but you just appreciate the longevity and the career that he had. And he's become a pretty good broadcaster too. And so you take a step back from the moment and you realize again, like, man, that was a tough moment, but like, he executed a pitch and it didn't go the way that, you know, 11-year-old Jake wanted it to go. But man, that's a hall of very good career that he has.
That is our guy, Jake Eisenberg, joining us on the show. Jake, you know what, man? We got to hang out at one point. We've talked about this over the course of the last 2 years. At some point, me, you, and Rob, we're going to go to dinner, man.
Yeah, look, you got my number. You know where to find me. I'm just waiting by the phone, waiting for you to call. You know, this is a second date now, C-Dot, and, you know, I'm ready for a third.
I can't wait for it. That's Jake Eisenberg joining us on the show today. Thanks, Jake.
Yep, thank you, guys.
Absolutely. That is Jake Eisenberg joining us on the show. All right, we go from Jake Eisenberg coming up on the other side. I told you, we're talking baseball today. Ryan Lefevre will be on the show next. Don't turn that dial. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
All right, welcome back into the show. We are very happy to be welcomed by our next guest. I believe at some point he is going to be in the Baseball Hall of Fame. He always tries to play it low key, but he knows what I'm saying is fact. We are honored to be joined by Ryan LaFever on the show today as we send the Royals off. They certainly deserve it based on the season that they had this year. Ryan, happy to have you come on today.
Hey, thank you, Carrickton. I appreciate the compliment.
Absolutely. Ryan, how are you going to remember the 2024 Kansas City Royals?
Oh, boy. Hopefully, it'll be remembered as the foundation for a bunch of young players who got through a six-month season when nobody believed they could get this far, including myself included. I think what the best-case scenario would have been a 500 or a winning season and build from there, but they far surpassed that. And they played all those close games, and I hope that as they prepare for 2025, they look back on how they won and why they lost. They weren't blown out at all. They weren't overwhelmed by any team. And that this will be the beginning for them.
Yeah,
And if they have a nice run, we'll, getting back to your original question, if they have a nice run, that we'll remember 2024.
Yeah, no, I apologize for that, Ryan. At least for me, I think a lot of people were kind of in the same vein that I was. I haven't been going to as many games over the last couple of years because the Royals haven't been that good, that this was a real cool reminder of how fun baseball can be and how baseball creates a different kind of community than football or any other team. That, you know, there were those moments over the course of the season and certainly over the course of the last 10 days, like you could really feel a buzz and enthusiasm about Royals baseball that you haven't really felt since 14 or 15.
And I felt the same things last night and the night before that I felt in 2014 and 2015. I mean, the place was packed. The fans were into it, and maybe even more into it than they were in 14 and 15, because I think those 2 years, all of us were just astonished that here we were in back-to-back years after all those miserable seasons, where now there are a lot of seasoned fans who remember, you know, how you act and when to stand and when to chant "Let's go Royals." And I mean, they didn't seem like a fan base that hadn't been to the playoffs in 9 years.
No, it certainly wasn't. I mean, you could just feel it yesterday. I was just talking to Jake Eisenberg about this, that if Kyle Isbell hits that home run, it is one of my favorite memories at Kauffman, because you just knew that, man, the Royals just need one spark, one hit, something offensively to really get things going. He narrowly misses it. It's on the warning track. If he hits that home run, that place absolutely explodes last night.
Yeah, and I was behind the microphone when he hit it, and I thought it was gone. I was building for a game tying home run, and my family was sitting on the third base and left field side of the ballpark, and my boys were telling me that they thought it was gone, and it would have been such a Royals way to tie the game, not Junior getting the hit or Massey, who was so great in the postseason, not Vinny, not Sally, but you know, the number nine hitter or eight hitter who the Royals just stuck with all year because of his defense. And he had his ups and downs. And when we look back on his season, he has a lot of room for growth offensively. But that would have been such a Royals way to tie that game.
No, it absolutely would have been. Right now we're talking Long Island Fever joining us on the show here for a couple minutes. Just wanted to get his thoughts as baseball season has come to a close. We've been asking people how they are going to remember the season, and Bobby Witt Jr.'s name has come up a bunch. This is going to be the year that I think, you know, with teams, you realize it. Like from 13 to 14, the Royals went from being a good team to then turning into a great team. This is going to be the year that I think we look back in. Bobby Witt finally reached the potential. I don't say finally, like it took a long time, but we had heard so much about him as a prospect that when he got here, it took, you know, maybe 18 months. But man, when he started to figure things out, he became one of the three best players in baseball.
You know, Denny and I talked for a while after the game last night on the air, and he and I feel the same way in that if Aaron Judge is the MVP, fine. I just don't understand how he is the clear-cut number one, everyone else is a distant second and third to him, MVP. And I was raised differently in that there were MVPs who had really good years, but sometimes they didn't have a great year, but they were the most important player to their team. And so you begin with winning teams. I mean, a great player on a bad team, you know, who cares? I mean, he can't control the team's complete win-loss record, but there was just a feeling of the most valuable player should come from a most valuable team. And I don't see Aaron Judge play every day. I don't see how he handles the pressure of being with the Yankees. But the thing, all the different things that Bobby Witt Jr. does for the Royals, and just the way that he plays the game. I mean, I've said this several times this year that the other 25 guys on that roster watch Bobby play, and I'm sure they think to themselves, well, I can't do that. I mean, I just don't have that skill set. But the way that he plays the game and the enthusiasm with which he plays the game was contagious. And I think it's a long time ago now, but I believe his first hit of the season against Minnesota was a line drive to right field, maybe toward right center field, and it just looked like a single to right, and he turned it into a double. And the Royals didn't win that game, but it was like, okay, Bobby came to play. I mean, he's ready to go here on opening day, and he played that way for 6 months, and I think it rubbed off on the other guys.
From just watching these two teams, and I think they were pretty even, I think ultimately the big difference was that the Yankees are just equipped to overcome Aaron Judge not being Aaron Judge, where the Royals, I mean, if they were going to win this series, you needed Vinny and Bobby Witt to be special, and that's just not the way that the series played itself out. But Aaron Judge was not great for the first three games of the series. He played better yesterday, but he was not great. But when you've got Soto, who just always gets on base and stands and hits the big home run in game three, I mean, that ultimately was the difference in these two teams.
Yeah, I agree with that, Carrington. And, you know, the Yankees were a much better team on the road this year than they were at home. And you think about the home field advantage at Yankee Stadium, but I think they were 9 games over .500 at home and 19 or 20 games above .500 on the road. And I think what comes with that is they're used to what they experienced the last two nights at Kauffman Stadium. Maybe not quite to that degree, but they expect to go on the road, and they know they're going to draw that team's biggest crowds of the year. Yankee fans are going to come out of the woodwork. You're going to have fans in that city who are following their team from a distance, but because Aaron Judge is in town and the Yankees are in town, Garrett Cole, whatever, they might want to come and watch the game in person. And they're the villains of the league, and so people are booing them. So I think that was much more of a comfort zone for them. So I think they were also equipped for that, where you know, where the Royals may have felt some pressure. You know, they didn't feel as much pressure as the Orioles did in Baltimore. Maybe they didn't feel as much pressure as the Yankees did in New York. But when they got to Kauffman Stadium, I think it's natural to believe that there was a shift of pressure because, you know, back to Bobby Witt Jr., I mean, this just speaks to his character that one of the quotes that I read from last night was he felt like he let some people down. How many superstar guys say that? and really mean it. And it really feels like with him, he meant that. But it was a first time for them, first time playing at home. I know they loved it. But I think in that way, too, the Yankees were equipped to do whatever it is they needed to do in that environment on the road.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that really stood out to me yesterday with Bobby Witt Jr. was the fact that after the game, I thought it was pretty noticeable that he was watching the Yankees celebrate. And you and I have been around and seen enough great players. Like, they sort of take those moments, those memories, and they use that as fuel in the offseason. I'm really excited to see what Bobby Witt has learned from this experience and come back next year even better. Because, I mean, there is still another level, which is crazy as it sounds, there's still another level that he can tap into.
There was a point last night where the basic celebration on the field was over. It was winding down, and people watched the Yankees celebrate, and there are a bunch of guys in the Royals dugout. And then there comes a point where it's like, okay, we've seen enough. And Steve Stewart in the radio booth pointed down to the Royals dugout, and Bobby was still down there. He was the only guy in the dugout, just watching. And then Giancarlo Stanton came over because the camera position for the MLB Network is over by the Royals dugout. So he walked to the other side, and classy move by him. He went to Bobby, and who knows what he said to him, but I'm sure he said, "Hey man, you had a heck of a year and congratulations." And Bobby very respectfully got up and shook his hand, and they gave each other a hug. But I did find that interesting that when it was all said and done, there was one guy left in the Royals dugout, and it was Bobby Witt Jr. So, you know, a combination of soaking it in and thinking, you know, we should be that team. We can be that team. And using that for fuel, as you said, during the offseason.
Right now, we're talking to Ryan LaFever here for a couple more minutes, just getting his thoughts as baseball season has ended here in Kansas City. Ryan, I don't think anyone wanted to maybe admit it when it happened, but, I mean, that Vinny injury, I don't want to say it was the beginning of the end, but he was playing at such a high level, and you had that 1-4 that was really, really strong for this team in the first 3/4 of the season, and this offense just never really recovered from that loss. And even when he came back, I think you got the quick spark against the Orioles, but his injury was just too much for this team to overcome.
No doubt. You're right. And I get why Matt Quatrero and the guys can't say that, because that just gives an excuse for not performing the next day. And so they have to do their best to just move on. And every team has had a significant injury. When Vinny went down, it just reminded me of how healthy the team was this year. I mean, they were remarkably healthy. I mean, you got a starting pitcher who breaks his foot, for crying out loud, and he's only out for 2 weeks, and he comes back and, you know, he doesn't lose stride at all. But the Royals were the first team to have three guys with 60 RBIs, 70 RBIs, 80 RBIs, 90 RBIs, and they were going to be the first team to have three guys in the lineup with 100 RBIs. Who predicted that coming out of spring training? And so that top of the order that you were talking about was so reliable that it took the pressure off the rest of the lineup. And so we wondered what was going to happen, and the results were pretty immediate. You know, the Royals scored, this is something that we didn't talk a whole lot about. You know, the Royals lost their last 8 games at Kauffman Stadium. They went 0-6 on that last homestand, and they lost the 2 games to the Yankees. And they scored 3 runs in the last 36 innings, which seemed impossible in the first half of the season and into the second half. They were one of the best offenses at home. I mean, they were made for that ballpark like the teams in 14 and 15 were. But, yeah, it just goes to show, you know, you take one guy out of the mix, and it doesn't mean that the lineup is – you know, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to crumble to pieces, but it did show what an impact he had, too. And let me just say this about Vinny, too. I really admire the season that Vinny had. He drove in 97 runs about as unselfishly as I've seen anyone in a long time. And we've gone through an era of hitters, young hitters, and I hope we're out of it, who, you know, grew up in the perfect game showcases and, are like gypsies going from showcase team to showcase team and didn't really play a lot of long-term team baseball. It was just, you know, go play your game and show how far you can hit it. And then you go to the minor leagues, and a lot of teams began to develop players. Hey, look, go to the plate. I know there's a runner at second base with nobody out, but we're not worried about that in Double-A. You just go find a pitch and you drive it. And the words weren't try and hit a home run, but I think there was a subliminal message of hit the ball as hard and as far as you can. And it works in A ball, and it works in Double-A, and probably works in Triple-A. But when you get to the big leagues, you know, you might be hitting seventh against Gerrit Cole, and you got to get a runner in from second base. You're not going to go up there and say, well, this is the kind of hitter I am. I'm just going to go up there and, you know, swing from my rear end and try and hit a home run. And Vinny, I thought, found more ways to drive in runs. I mean, he became an RBI guy. It was a ground ball with the infield back, a fly ball with the infield in, a bloop base hit to left, a home run, a three-run double. I was so impressed with him having the focus on what does my team need me to do right here, as opposed to, well, this is the hitter I am. If I get a pitch and hit it out of the ballpark, great. If I strike out, well, I'll get him next time. He did not have that approach at all. And I think that rubbed off on the rest of the lineup. So you take that out, and that was a big hole.
Last thing here, Ryan, we've been asking people this, and I'm curious to get your perception. You know, you just grew up in a different part of the country. Who is your baseball villain? I bring that up because of Jazz Chisholm. Like, Jazz Chisholm over the course of the last week has turned into, you know, there is some 12-year-old kid right now who Jazz Chisholm is his least favorite baseball player. When you were 12 years old, who was that player for you?
Oh, man. Well, that was 41 years ago. So, you know, I'll try and think as I'm talking here, but I had a really interesting thing happen to me when I was young. I grew up in Los Angeles. My dad was a Dodger, rookie of the year, world champion, coach for the Dodgers, and their enemy, and I don't use that word loosely, I mean, their enemy was the San Francisco Giants. My dad was the hitting coach and first base coach of the Dodgers in 1979. I was 8 years old. The next year, he was the first base coach and the hitting coach for the San Francisco Giants. So the enemy was the Giants 1 year, and then my hometown team the very next year became the enemy for me, and I felt it. And the Dodgers and Giants would play at Candlestick Park or at Dodger Stadium, and there would be fights in the stands, and people would be, you know, Dodger fans would be burning Giants hats and jerseys, and some guy would run on the field, and it was just, it was chaos. But I just wanted my dad's teams to do well. And my dad's teams hated the Giants 1 year, and my dad's teams hated the Dodgers the next year. So it was a very confusing time for an 8-year-old and a 9-year-old.
You know what? That makes a lot of sense. That's a perfect way to end this. Ryan, you know I have all the respect in the world for you. I'm sad that we're not going to have to hear you call games. You're not calling any more games next year, but I think I speak for everybody. I think we all are really excited for baseball season, and it's fun to have an off season in which people are going to track. I envision a day, Ryan, in which the Chiefs are about to play, but the Royals make a move, and just for a second, the Royals are going to be the biggest story in late winter. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I am too. And it's been a while, hasn't it, that we haven't had to try to sell a 56-win team that we think is going to get better, or a 65-win team or a 70-win team. Now we're selling a team that was 10 games above 500 and went almost right to the wire with the New York Yankees in the playoffs.
That is Ryan LaFever joining us on the show today. Thank you, Ryan.
You got it, Carrington.
Absolutely. We appreciate you. That is Ryan LaFever joining us on the show today. I bring this up because, well, I think it's important. And I'm not here to make excuses for the Royals. But, I mean, the Vinny Pasquantino injury was kind of the end of the season. Now, I know we want to stay positive. We want to remain hopeful and all those things. I get it. I mean, there are two different versions of the Kansas City Royals offense. There is the version of the offense that had him healthy. There was the version of the Royals offense that did not have him healthy. Let me give you the numbers. In the 135 games up until August 29th, the Royals were 75-60, and they were ranked fifth in Major League Baseball with 4.8 runs per game. So up until late August, the Royals' offense was pretty good. If the Royals had averaged 4.9 runs in this game, 4.87 runs, they would have beat the New York Yankees. If they had just had the offense that they had pre-Vinny Pasquantino injury, they win that series. In the final 27 games, so after Vinny's injury, the Royals went 11-16. They were ranked 30th in Major League Baseball at 2.89. Now, again, limited sample size. We're talking about a month of baseball, and we're talking about 5 months of baseball. They went from fifth in offense to 30th in offense. There's only 30 teams. They were dead last offensively once Vinny Pasquantino got hurt. They were dead last in batting average. They hit 203 the rest of the season after Vinny's injury. .203. They had an on-base percentage of 27%. Slugging was .302. They scored 74 runs after Vinny's injury. 74 runs. They played 6 weeks of baseball after Vinny's injury. They scored 74 runs in 6 weeks of baseball. They scored two or fewer runs in 13 of the remaining games after the injury to Vinny. So I get it. One player should not have that much of an effect on your offense. We just watched it over the last 6 weeks. It did. And I understand the philosophy is always next man up. I understand. I get it. You know, an injury happens. This guy steps in. And no, that's not the way. Not all injuries are created equal. If certain guys get hurt on your team, that ends your season. There's no bouncing back. There's no coming back from it. Chiefs ain't winning the Super Bowl if Chris Jones isn't playing in the postseason. That's not the way that this thing works. And the Royals season, at least in terms of big dreams, I don't want to say it was over. In terms of big dreams, in terms of you really being able to dream, their dream died when Vinny Pasquantino got hurt. And then when he came back and he wasn't the same player. You were not beating the Yankees without a healthy Vinny Pasquantino. You were not upsetting them. We gave the analogy yesterday. You can win one NFL playoff game 13-10. You're not doing that three straight weeks. It's just really hard to do it. And the Royals, they were just in a position in the final 6 weeks that you were asking this pitching staff or the starter to go out there and put up seven innings, one earned run, three hit baseball, and asking the pitching staff to do that every single day. We can complain about the walks all you want. And I'm not saying that the walks were not a factor in this series. You are not winning if you were dead last in batting average, dead last in on-base percentage, dead last in slugging percentage, and runs over the final 6 weeks of the season. You are not beating the Yankees. You are not beating the Guardians. You are not beating the Tigers. You are not beating any of those teams if you can't figure out a way to score more runs than the Royals did in the final 6 weeks of the season. Coming up on the other side, Jake Eisenberg said something really interesting. The last time that the Royals lost in the playoffs before the World Series was 1981. How long ago was that? Well, we'll tell you. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for K-State Athletics, 96.5. The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
I just want to go back and I just want to be clear here. I was not making any announcement about Ryan LaFever. I was just saying I'm sad because baseball season is over, so he's not going to be calling games anymore for this season. I didn't mean like extended past this year. I see the confusion on the text line. Wait, Ryan? No, Ryan's not retiring. I apologize. Maybe I phrased it poorly. I just meant that we won't be able to turn on the radio anymore in 2024 and we're not going to hear Ryan LaFever, but in 2025 we're going to hear Ryan LaFever. The text line just flooded like I was making some announcement. No, I assure you, I will not be making announcements about Ryan LaFever's career. I don't want to make an announcement about his career. I want Ryan LaFever to do it. I want him to keep calling games for a long time. I told you guys, I think that at some point Ryan LaFever should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame. I think, and you guys know, I love Denny Matthews. I think that Ryan LaFever has become the voice of the Kansas City Royals. I think he's become the voice.
He's definitely the voice of our era. No, yeah, 100%. No disrespect to Denny.
No, I love Denny. I love Denny on a personal level. Ryan LaFever has become the, if you're under 40 years old, Ryan LaFever is your voice. So no, Ryan LaFever is going to be calling games. I just want to be clear. I don't want there to be any confusion. Oh, Carrington said, no, I did not say that. I want to go ahead and clear things up because that did not come from me. All right, we'll get back to serious things coming up at the top of the hour. Maybe we'll get to some serious things right now. I do have some more numbers and stats about the Royals. I'm here to tell you they did not hit very well. That is basically all the stats that I have for you guys of how they were eliminated in the postseason. But you know what? I'm not focused on that. Jake Eisenberg said something that's interesting. This is the first time that the Royals made the postseason without making the World Series since 1981. You got to remember, in 1980, they made the playoffs. They went to the World Series. They lost to the Phillies. They obviously won the World Series in 1985. They then went back in 14, 15. You guys know the history. Well, this year, you know, they just had a regular old kind of year, you know, where you have a good season, you go to the playoffs, and you lose. Like, we see that all the time in sports. The Royals finally had one of those kind of seasons. Rob, I asked you to look this up. What was the top song the last time that the Royals just regular, plain old got eliminated from the postseason? This is from October of 1981. Let's hear what the top song was.
How nice has just begun.
Forever.
What is this?
I'll hold you close.
By Lionel Richie and Diana Ross.
Oh, this is the song from Happy Gilmore.
This is the song from Happy Gilmore.
I was waiting for the chorus. I was like, I think I've heard this song before. I think this was the song you came out to for your first dance, too, at your wedding.
This was not that first song.
Yeah, I think you guys
were not playing 1981 bangers at my wedding.
Now, that's what I call music, volume one. I thought this was the song from your wedding. I couldn't remember. October 1981. Some of y'all got conceived to that record right there. It's back pretty, in the day. Pops turned that on to try to set the mood.
It's pretty rare that we get two, like, iconic artists for top songs. Sometimes we do this and it's like this Kesha. One hit wonder you've never heard of. Yeah.
It's Mims. That's who it is. That's who it is for the one hit wonder. Yeah, no, the top song in October 1981. All right, let's see what the top movie was. We're doing this. This is the last time that the Royals just got regular plain old eliminated from the postseason.
You still want the Ark? It has been loaded onto a truck for Cairo.
Of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, I just want to say,
from Steven Spielberg.
That guy's voice. That guy has done the. How long has that guy been doing the voice for the trailers?
I mean, I think he is the voice of trailers.
Yeah, that guy did the trailer voice for 30 something years.
Are you Indiana Jones guy?
I did like Indiana Jones.
There you go, okay.
Remember, I watched it a couple years ago when we did the little 80s movies.
Mm-hmm.
I did watch it for the first time. I had never seen Indiana Jones before. And I did leave like, oh, okay, that's good. Are they still trying to bring that series back?
Kind of. There was one last summer, I think.
Okay, well, you know what I don't want? I don't want my action heroes to be older than Bernie Sanders. Once you get to that point, bro, you got to come on now.
But the movie took place in the 80s, so it was bro. Like... It was like he was old.
Harrison Ford is 86 years old, bro. You know, you know. Your whole Raiden Tombs, it's over.
Did you ever see Fleabag on TV show?
No. I don't even know what that is right now. I felt like you was saying, calling me a slur right now. I didn't know. I thought he was going to have fisticuffs. I don't know what was happening. I thought you were calling me a Fleabag. What did I do to you? I've done nothing to you. What is Fleabag?
It's like Girls. Like, it's that, like, you know that show? Yeah, it's like the girl in that, Phoebe Waller, she's the star next to...
You could be making up people's names right now. I don't know who Phoebe Waller is or Fleabag. I don't... This is 96.5 The Fan, not The Buzz. I don't know who Fleabag is. No clue who Fleabag is. All right, I want to play for you. This is the top TV show in October of 1981. Can we try to guess? You know the answer. Let me try to guess. This feels like a...
Big Bang Theory.
No, this feels like an A-Team night court in the heat of the night. That's what it feels like in October of 81. Let's see what the top TV show was.
Well, we're moving on now.
The Jeffersons.
The Jeffersons.
Oh, my goodness. We really did move up. Oh, my goodness. What a show. Have you ever seen the Jeffersons before?
I have seen the Jeffersons before.
Wow, that was a plus 600 dog. Oh, I can't believe that.
I mean,
you know about George and Wheezy?
It wasn't like a I'm locked in because of my age, but yeah, I've seen the Jeffersons.
Okay,
it was on Nick at Night.
Okay, I didn't know. Okay, I would assume you watched I Love Lucy. I would have assumed you watched the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Come on,
I didn't know you were watching Good Times and the Jeffersons growing up. There's no chance. Text line 913-586-7965. Come on now, back me up. You think that Rob had seen the Jeffersons before? No chance you had seen the Jeffersons before. I'm stunned, shocked that this has happened on this show.
I didn't know you knew about George and Weezy. Absolutely no clue.
You want to know an oddity about my childhood? I heard the Jeffersons theme song, and then I heard that Batter Up by Nelly, and I was like, oh, that's what he's referencing.
Okay. No.
Okay. Yeah. No. That is what it was.
See?
That's not what everyone thought when they watched the Jeffersons, but that's what happened with me.
No, that's what it is. Yeah. Text line. No shot. Yeah. Come on now. We thought Rob watched the Jeffersons. Someone said, you're saying that because Rob's white. No, I think Rob watched The Cosby Show. I think Rob watched Fresh Prince of Bel Air. I think Rob watched Martin. I didn't think he watched the Jeffersons. That caught me off guard here. That caught me off guard. Maybe I'm wrong. I ain't caught me off guard. I'm stunned. Someone said, I'm white as right, and I watched the Jefferson as a kid. I'm 50. Rob is 34. That's different. Of course you watched it when you were 50. You only had three channels when you were 50. There wasn't much else for you to be watching in 1954. There wasn't much else on television when that happened.
There was the channel.
Yeah, you guys had one channel. Yeah, if you're 50 years old, you love the Jeffersons. You didn't have a whole lot of other options. Rob grew up with options. That's why it startled me. I didn't know he was watching Three's Company and Good Times when you were a kid. I'm stunned. That's what I am. I'm absolutely stunned. All right, coming up on the other side, we'll get back to serious baseball things. This is The Drive.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.